Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to part one of our classical Q&A show for October. I'm Martin Gregg, and with me today are Graham Hunter, host of The Big Interview, and our guest for these shows, La Liga TV's Pete Jensen. We have questions, as always, from our socios who support this podcast at patreon.com/Graham Hunter and from our wonderful sponsors at Bet365. Firstly, I want to say a big hello to our new socios who have joined up since our last Q&A, and in no particular order, they are Dario Marconi, Cameron Can, Ralph Nemo, Ulrich Bredegaard, Bill Beattie, Ryan Hart, Scott Johnson, Stuart Wood, Jim Finney, John Graham, Liam Duncan, Sean Laurie, Michael Riddick, Robert Gray and Linda Perkins. This Q&A goes out to you guys. Thank you for all your support. Today we are focusing our attentions on Sunday's Clásico, Barcelona v Real Madrid at the Camp Nou. And we were actually due to record this yesterday morning, but given that both sides were in Champions League action this week, it only felt right to nudge the recording back to this morning, which is Thursday. On Tuesday, Real Madrid hammered Shakhtar Donetsk 5-0 away from home, and Barcelona beat Dynamo Kiev 1-0 in the Camp Nou on Wednesday night. I think it was a good decision to move this recording because both matches were very instructive in terms of the weekend. And it takes us into our first question from socio Andrew Graves, who said, Madrid looked great. Barca got the win. What do these performances herald for the weekend's Clásico? Graham, we might start with you. I think you were at the Camp Nou last night. What did you glean from the Barca performance in terms of the weekend?
Well, first of all, I can't echo strongly enough what you said about new socios. It's magical to have you on board. Send in your questions. Feel free to criticise when you want to. But enjoy the interviews, enjoy the Q&As. As far as, you know, you framed that question on the 50% about Barcelona getting the results. There's something pretty fundamental about that in the current climate at Camp Nou, because this was a hat-trick, a triptych of games which were of gigantic importance. OK, they could have lost against Valencia and scrape through the week with results in the other two games, but to win that match against the Valencia side, which threatened them, which hit the post, as well as scoring, and where Ter Stegen had to pull off a pretty remarkable save, and to have the Pepe Bordalás, the Valencia manager, coming off saying afterwards, had the one that hit the post gone in, had the penalty not been given, I think it was a good penalty, we could have won. So 3-1, Ansu the hero. There are two ways to look at that. Is it a resurrection? Is it a breathing of life? Or is it simply a result? But if you tie it together with two out of three so far of their mega week, and I don't care what anybody says, particularly retrospectively, okay, there's a buzz of reasonably good feeling. Ansu has renewed. Barcelona did beat Dynamo Kiev. They are fragile. It looks like, we'll talk about this later, but it looks very much like they won't have either Araujo at the back or Pedri in midfield fit to start against Real Madrid. Probably not fit for the bench. Probably not. We're recording at a little bit of a distance, and with Clásicos, you never know. But when you win two out of three, in a climate where, number one, I go back to my point, the Dynamo Kiev game, apart from Champions League finals, Clásicos included, was the most important game for Barcelona since I've been alive, never mind reporting. To lose and go out after 50% of the Champions League group, to go out for the first time in a group stage for 21 years, at a time when they've lost 1.5 billion down the back of the sofa, and qualifying and playing a couple of knockout games can make a 70 million, 80 million euro difference. That would have been literally catastrophic. So, in terms of how they approach the Clásico, and I was lucky enough last night to get an interview with Jordi Alba, who had a massive big ice packet wrapped around his ankle and who had to hobble between interviews. Really, to be honest with you, as much as journalists need access to players, that was one of those where, had I been Barcelona, I'd have said, OK, he might be man of the match, but he's not coming out. Sunday's more important. Anyway, long and short, and I listened at great length to Piqué, who was being interviewed in the flash stall next to me. There is, one, a mood of determination that this Clásico, with a victory, Piqué was saying we go above Madrid. Piqué was saying there'll be a full house. There won't. You go into the game having incurred no more injuries, having only conceded one goal across two games, albeit the Dynamo were ultra negative, and you've done your business. So, given that Koeman was ordered to resurrect 4-3-3 by his president, which normally, I mean, you're about, Martin, to release a book, The Invincibles, by Sacchi, and Sacchi worked at a club, as did Ancelotti and Capello, where Berlusconi, a president, interfered and tried to get coaches to pick his 11 and so on, and they made light work of that. But the norm is, if a president is interfering, there are problems. The fact is, this president, Joan Laporta at Barcelona, has put blinkers on Koeman, saying, if you want to keep your job, you were out the door, Jordi Craig persuaded me, if you want to keep your job, stop fucking around with 3-5-2, play 4-3-3. He has, and lo and behold, they've played better, the players are more comfortable, they're more fluent, two victories. On the form that they've shown in those two games, Martin, to answer our social question, they lose to Madrid. Unless there is an absolute overhaul of the positional play, the speed of passing and the ability to finish chances, and also just the ability to be streetwise enough to compete for 50-50 balls when they break loose. As we stand today, if this game was being played tonight, I would have said it's a 3-1 win for Madrid at Camp Nou.
Yeah, the difference at the moment between the two teams in terms of how they go into the game is that Madrid have got a plan. They've got a long-term plan. Decisions like bringing Camavinga in last summer is really started well, and it's going to be Mbappe next summer almost definitely. Barca are living from day to day, it's just how do we get to the end of the week, how do we get past the next crisis. They played like a sack of potatoes last night, and fortunately Joan Laporta was then able to take the ribbons off a new Ansu Fati contract, so he's going to stay according to his contract he'll be staying until 2027, which is just brilliant news. But everything has to be short term at the moment. Some crazy Barcelona fans will tell you that, you know what, we'd rather just be knocked out. We don't want to be humiliated again in the group stages. We don't want to get a thumping. Well, you get 20 million if you reach the quarters, and Barcelona cannot afford to wave away that sort of money. And also, if they finish third, you're in the Europa League. And in terms of being humiliated, that's not great either. So it was so important last night to get the win. In many ways, it's kind of put the bar low for Sunday. I mean, had they won comfortably last night, which they should have done, and they missed so many chances, had they won comfortably last night, then maybe the optimism would have gone up a little bit too much. As it is, because they were so poor, I think most Barca fans, and the ones that actually go to the games and inside the stadium, are really dealing with this well, and they're behind the team. There were a few whistles in the second half last night, but by and large, they're kind of with the team, and they will go into Sunday's game thinking, we're not going to win this game. On form, Madrid are in a much better place.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll come back to some of the issues around Barcelona and, you know, the Ansu renewal as well. But let's touch on Madrid, because obviously prior to the international break, they had had a couple of really bad results. You know, obviously Sheriff in the Champions League and then losing to Espanyol in the league. So they were not in a good place coming into that Shakhtar game. But, you know, what a performance. I mean, that was an utterly emphatic performance and result.
Shakhtar helped them out with they played a big part in the first two Madrid goals, but Madrid were brilliant. Benzema is the best player in La Liga at the moment, I think, without any question. There have been a few wobbles at the back, but I think Alaba and Militao as a partnership has great potential if they can play together week in, week out. That's only going to get better. They're bound to miss Carvajal. Lucas Vazquez actually played quite well by his standards at right back against Shakhtar, but I don't think he'll start against Barca. It's big news that Mendy comes back. They've got the 3 degrees in midfield, you know, the Modric, Kroos and Casemiro. Vinicius is playing sensationally, and he's got the nice little dilemma, Ancelotti, do I play Valverde or do I play Rodrigo? So they're in a very good place. The opposition were poor, but then the opposition against Barca were poor, and the difference in the way they put them away was there for all to see last night and the night before.
Graham, what did you make of it? I mean, it was just such an enjoyable, eye-catching performance. I mean, two incredible strikes from Vinicius Jr. And an assist as well from him. What was your take on it?
First of all, if I can go a little bit off-piste, I've really enjoyed these last two Real Madrid managers because as much as whenever we used to watch Zidane talking, either in live situations after a game or in building up to a game, he got dreadfully pissed off with the rubbish that the media threw at him. And there was, from our profession, a whole heap of boring, disrespectful crap that was repeated each week. But just about every three or four press conferences or interviews, he'd quite simply tell you the truth. And that's a rarity. When a manager will volunteer something and go back to what I would say is maybe not the old days, but certainly when the three of us would have regularly been at the first stage of our manager interviews or manager press conferences. And by and large, there was a less gladiatorial behaviour style. And managers could actually tell you things. Sometimes you'd get into their office after matches, you'd get a wee whiskey, and they would chat to you. And they would, you know, you'd sit in a manager's office, a group of six or seven of you, and they would give you stuff that was diamond material for the next few weeks. Well, Zidane every now and again would do that. And Ancelotti did it, is the reason I mentioned this, ahead of the game in Kiev against Donetsk. Because asked about why it was in recent seasons, around about October, Real Madrid consistently flagged, he went, I don't know. But if you come back off an international break, it's definitely the case that you notice it. Well, they didn't in Ukraine. And he said, you know, the important time of the season is not now. It's April, May, when the trophies are being won. Again, fine. But in being asked to analyse the two defeats, he largely put Sheriff down to an anomaly, a fluke, because Madrid had umpteen chances to score and didn't. And then Sheriff, through Till, who repeated his actions in San Siro, scored a wonder goal. It was absolutely gorgeous. The first Sheriff goal was pinpoint what Real Madrid are not good at. The ball was into behind the right back. The ball is crossed. Alaba's out of position. Nobody's ready for it. Bish bash bosh. It's not quite a breakaway goal, but it's an analytics goal. They've known exactly how to damage Real Madrid. At Espanyol, they get outplayed. Literally all across the pitch, they try to go toe-to-toe, they sit far too deep, and as Espanyol realised, not just we're in this game, it was very like a game three or four seasons ago when Girona went into a match against Real Madrid up in their own stadium. After the game, having won 2-1, Porto said, at halftime, we all looked at each other and said, we can win this. So they go into the game, not believing they can win it, they find out that they can. Espanyol had a similar sensation in winning that league game, but they worked it out sooner. They've got a fabulous coach. They've got quite a diminutive squad, but one that plays quick nimble, aggressive football. They're not absolutely awash with talent. They're not. And one of their important players, Dardar, is blows hot and cold and is a bit of a chica about how much effort he's willing to put in. And then if he puts in a big effort, gets knackered about 75 minutes in. But he can play. RDT up front should be playing national team football. And in the match against Espanyol, Real Madrid created an Alamo situation. They sat far too far back. They allowed themselves to be swamped. They lost confidence. They lost goals. And they found that there was no way back. And Ancelotti came out and said, I made a mistake. We can't play 4-4-2 with this team. We have to play 4-3-3. They did that. But the structure doesn't win you games, obviously. We all know that. It's about how the players interpret it, whether there are nuances to change when you're playing Shakhtar away. And in every instance, the positional intelligence of Real Madrid, the ability to use width, because the ball didn't get played through the midfield a great deal, really by either side. Midfielders had jobs to do, but it wasn't as if Madrid built through Casemiro and Modric and Kroos quite so much. It was about width, it was about pressing high and pinning Shakhtar back. And that 4-3-3, know what you're doing, press high, use really quick transitions, unleash Vinicius whenever possible. These and also centrally, which is a theme I've been going on about for a long time, because he played centrally for Flamengo when he was scoring the goals that got him his move to Real Madrid. If they play in that style, they'll take points and goals from the Clásico. So what I made about the game in the Olympic Stadium in Kiev was that the players, it's funny how, again, during our reporting careers, the three of us, there have been times, certainly prior to Lippi and his tridente of Ravanelli and Viali and call it Lombardo or if you want to call it Del Piero, but he played a trident. The tridente was the rebirth of 4-3-3. But during our working lives, particularly in the 80s, 4-3-3 was a swear word. People thought that you could not play midfield with three men in it. And now not only has it been in vogue for 20 years, the resumption of 4-3-3 and using it properly at both Real Madrid and Barcelona this week has had Handel's Hallelujah Chorus playing in the ears of the president and the fans.
I'm going to go to a quick break, but I think maybe not all of our listeners will have seen every kick of the ball this week, and if they haven't, then I would certainly direct them towards the Madrid-Donetsk highlights, not least for Modric's assist for Vinicius Junior's first goal, I think it was, with the chip finish over the goalkeeper, which was this kind of amazing sort of spaghetti junction in the penalty box, and Modric plays this eye of the needle pass through to Vinicius Junior, which I just thought was just amazing. I mean, you guys see this caliber of football and footballers week in, week out, and you know, to me, it's just astonishing to see that kind of level. Are you guys inured to that, or does it still quicken your pulse in the same way when you see that type of quality?
No, it's still. I mean, it's like saying, did you used to get tired of Messi? Oh, he's done that again. Oh, not so he's done the same again. I can't believe he did that last week. It's great to watch them and. You know, there's a silly debate about what's the best midfield, Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets or Casemiro, Modric and Kroos. And what that debate tells you is that just how good the Real Madrid trio is. But, you know, they're planning for beyond that. And, you know, Valverde and Camavinga and Blanco will come through at some point and are already there knocking on the door. So, but, yeah, they've been fantastic to watch. And Casemiro started the season very slowly, by the way. But he was better against Shakhtar. Let's see how he is on Sunday. But Modric just never seems to get any older, never seems to get any slower, certainly not in mentally anyway.
Yeah, Martin, I knew already that you thought that was an eaten mess of a goal. And those who didn't see it, which is your point, first of all, Benzema's power run is so crucial to the goal because he spreads the pitch left to right because he's gone down the left wing. But one of the things that makes Benzema so special, and there's nobody in this conversation that would moan if he, rather than Chiellini or rather than Messi or Lewandowski, if Benzema won the Ballon d'Or, because his form for years now has been literally extraordinary. I think he's underestimated. I think he's underpublicized, although he's on the campaign stump at the moment, flogging interviews at ten a penny. Like, would you like to talk longer? In phoning people, do you want to talk about the Ballon d'Or? But his run there, and one of the things that makes him so special, is that he drags the play both towards the Dinamo goal and wide, so that the Ukrainian team has got too many choices to make. And instead of looking to cut in onto his right foot, he sees Modric and cuts it back to Modric. And Modric, you talk about becoming inured to something. Modric sees that pass coming before Benzema has thought about it. And therefore, he's in a position just to... He doesn't move. He doesn't even do an Ancelotti eyebrow wiggle. He just uses... He leaves his right foot there so the ball takes a little dead cushion volley off it. And it's a beautiful billiard shot is all it is. There's no work involved apart from brain work for Modric. And the ball rockets off into Vinicius's path. And again, the difference with him is that there's a little virtual cycle with Vinicius, because in this monster gobble, monosodium glutamate, blipvert, blinking, your opinions changed world that we live in, people gave absolutely zero time to look at the things he was doing well and to understand the things he was doing poorly could be trained. Nonetheless, as experience has crept into his 21-year-old brain, and as goals and the respect of his colleagues has come, the accelerant, you know, the Dexys Midnight Runner for what he's doing right now is Ancelotti, who said, listen, fella, you're going to get no special favours, but I think you're exceptional. I want you to be scoring goals, making goals, carrying responsibility. I want to pick you. I'm going to pick you. I trust you. Now, it doesn't mean he gets an easy ride at all, but because he's trusted, that flood of confidence where he knows he's respected and trusted by his teammates, he knows he's playing better, he's getting marvellous coverage finally in the media, and Ancelotti's a believer. So suddenly, that split-second decision, not about passes, because for a year and a half now, he's been stopping and trying to ensure that he makes the right pass when he's made good ground. So there's already jam on your bread. But what he does now is he just goes into a quiet space when he finishes. When before it was like the, you know, the noise at the end of the Beatles, you know, Day in a Life. It was like you could hear the Albert Hall and the violins and the trombones, and it's like, oh, I've missed again. Now what he hears is just like beautiful Brian Eno calmness, and bosh, he scores and he scores and he scores and he scores. And there's a process there that can be lifted and applied to many, many, many football situations, not just Vinicius.
He's already got more goals this season than he got in the entirety of last season. I think he's got...
Any of his seasons. He's got more goals now than...
The previous seasons.
And even if you take all his seasons with Cup and Europe and any season where all his competitions are aggregated... His current goal total is higher than ever before in his 21-year-old life.
The respect he's got now from his teammates, where a year on from the famous Borussia Mönchengladbach tunnel scene when Benzema said to Mendy, look, don't give it to him, it's like he's playing for the other side. And Benzema's reaction to Vinicius' second goal against Shakhtar is he just kind of throws his arms up and as if to say, that was absolutely brilliant. I think he's got three big things going for him. One is that he's got Graham going into bat for him, and Graham has backed him for the last... He's backed him right from the start, right from the start. And he hasn't changed from that. And the other two things are, physically, I think, and obviously this could change, I suppose, through his career, and I hope we don't curse him, but physically he looks like he's indestructible. You've got poor old Ansu, who's already had one knee, but had to be rebuilt. Vinicius hasn't got any of those problems, and he looks like he can play week after week after week after week. And also mentally... He is benefiting from the confidence of not having to look over his shoulder and think, Ancelotti, we're going to make a change. I bet it's going to be me, as was the case with Zidane. But mentally, he seems to be... He can get over things very, very quickly. I mean, he comes out with a big smile on his face for the next game, whatever happened in the last game. And if you compare that to someone like João Felix, who's a sensational talent of similar age... and may well, you know, I'm sure we'll go on to do great things, but when he gets taken off or whatever, he seems to have the weight of the world on his shoulders. Vinicius doesn't have that, so I think he has a mental strength and a physical strength that are really, really going to help him push on.
Okay, we've got another question on Vinicius Junior in the second part of the Q&A, so keep your powder dry a little bit for that, guys. But as for just now, it's time for a break. We'll be back in a moment with a couple more questions to complete part one of this month's Q&A.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back with some questions on Barca. First up is Socio Kevin Jimenez. He says, I don't think I've been less excited for a Clásico ever before. Both teams are shadows of their former selves. I also miss the Clásicos being at night time. The atmosphere is so much better. My question is, how can you sell this match to a depressed Barca fan who expects nothing but a defeat? Is the answer simply Ansu?
Yeah, I wish it was at night as well, Kevin, I've got to say. But the thing is, it depends what you want from your life experience. If you always want to be incredibly excited by everything, I don't. Sometimes I just want to be fascinated. And right now I'm fascinated to see how Barca rebuild, post-Messi. And Ansu, obviously, is going to be at the heart of that. I mean, if you saw the game last night, and I'm sure Kevin was watching it, the moment when Ansu just has to roll the ball back to Coutinho or Busquets and they score, and he doesn't, he tries the bicycle kick. Now, in, 15 years of Messi Graham, I never ever saw him, of all the brilliant things he did, I never ever saw Messi do anything that wasn't the best choice in terms of it, the move ending up as a goal. He never did anything for show. All the brilliance, it was never for the gallery. It was always for the ball to end up in the back of the net and to win. Ansu is just starting out, and we know that he's not going to be Messi, but he has the magic. He's been sprinkled with the stardust. We saw that from the way he came back after his injury and the impact that he made instantly coming on as a substitute. So he's someone that you can get very, very excited about. And the prospects of Ansu and a midfield with Gabi and Pedri in it, I don't think it's quite as bleak the future as is perhaps being painted. Having said that, I think you're going to lose on Sunday, Kevin. Sorry about that.
I have to tell you, when you get an answer as well composed as that, it's a little Iniesta answer you've just been given. You know, have a memory would be my answer. I remember many, many times when in the 21 years that I've lived in this country, when a Barcelona win seemed like a rarity, it seemed like a very special occasion, when they went to Bernabeu with, if not a loser's mentality, a hangdog, potentially beaten mentality. And you're allowed, if you feel disenchanted, that's fine. But Pete's expression about depends what you want for your life experience is a really good one, because this is nourishment. This is where people learn. This is where people change. This is when you can sieve out those who look as if they might make it, but this can become a litmus test. Not whether they win or lose, but how they comport themselves, what attitude they bring to the match, the duels, adversity, if there is some. I think it's good for all clubs to suffer, to go through Purdue, to have to change, to have to realise about work levels. Right now, talent aside, Barcelona and training aren't working hard enough, and that's Koeman's mindset and the club's mindset. There are players who've come into the club right now who are quite surprised at the standards. And Pete and I were in this country when Eideke Johnson joined Barcelona from Chelsea and literally couldn't believe, in comparison to the Mourinho regime that he'd been through at Chelsea, couldn't believe how soft, how limpid the work levels, how many sessions there were, how much time off the players got. And he actually went and demanded to Rijkaard that they up their level. Now, Rijkaard's life was much more dishevelled than Koeman's is. But Koeman, while he's hanging on to his job, is fighting because he's stubborn, because he's a Dutchman. He's not self-examining and going, maybe there are things I can change. He was ordered to restore 433. And as yet, he hasn't been ordered because the president, the board, don't have the know-how to say this is how a training regime should be. But when Guardiola came in and succeeded Rijkaard, it wasn't simply Guardiola's clarity of ideas and his Leonardo da Vinci coaching style. It was a general tightening, upping of standards. And, you know, signings, talent, youth aside, Barcelona are in a similar situation. What do they call it here? Bache? No, a trough, whereby they're getting by on talent and attitude rather than preparation and exceptional coaching. I think that Koeman is an exceptional man. He definitely, in revitalising Alba and Busquets and Messi last season, which he did, takes credit. He takes enormous credit for the emergence of Araujo, Mingueza, Gavi, Pedri, Balde in due course. And he had Ansu largely robbed from him, but in being careful with him in midweek, I had to doff my cap to Koeman, because the temptation to play Ansu from the start and play three times from the start must have been gigantic. Must have been absolutely huge. And he didn't. So the long and short is, at the moment, that there are standards at Football Club Barcelona which you know, bleed into the performance that you'll see on Sunday. And if you're a fan, then because Pete and I are chroniclers of what happens in Spain. Neither of us are fans of Barcelona or Real Madrid. But if you are a fan, one, this is the time to get behind them. And two, this is the time where you can learn, where you can draw conclusions. And football is occasionally about losing. So if it's a defeat on Sunday afternoon, which most of us think it will be, but football, bloody hell, you never know. Sorry to quote Fergie, Kevin. Watch and learn.
Okay, you touched on the Koeman situation there. This probably takes us into our final question of part one from our sponsors at Bet365, who ask, what would a win or a defeat mean to Koeman and Barcelona? Just to add on to that, Socio Robert Ryan asks, is this more a must-win for Barcelona with their recent struggles and issues? So we'll talk about that in a second. Add on one other part to that, Socio Chris Hennigan. Hi, Graham and Pete. Gavi, Pedri, Ansu, and maybe to a less extent, Nico, and even poor old Ricky Puig. Can they truly herald a brave new world for Barca, either now or the inevitable post-Koeman era? So we'll come to that in a minute, but let's talk a little bit about the Koeman situation, which is kind of rumbling on week to week, and the must-win nature of this game for the club and for Koeman.
I suppose, I was going to say he's past the worst, but it depends on the nature. If they do lose, it depends on the nature of the defeat. Because it's obviously one thing to lose in a tight game where they've played well, and another to be well beaten. There is still Xavi lurking in the background, and there does seem to have been Laporta seems to be closer to Xavi now than perhaps at any time since he became president. It's always the option that's there, and I suppose it will be possibly back on the table if they suffered a heavy defeat. Koeman sat down himself in his press conference before the Atletico Madrid game and basically talked like a man who knew this was going to be his last match in charge. Graham touched on the role that Jordi Cruyff may have had I don't think he wants to take responsibility for having been the one who says, no, we must not fire him, but at least showing some sort of respect to someone who came into the club when, you know, things weren't great. Dealt with the situation last season with losing Suarez. I have sympathy for Koeman, and I think sometimes he gets a hard time. If he says it is what it is after a beating suffered by Bayern, then he's absolutely slaughtered. But Gerard Pique can say, we could have played for 3 hours and we wouldn't score, and then no one says anything. I think earlier in the season he was being hammered when all he had was Luke de Jong and Memphis Depay. And he was trying to make the point that you can't play the expansive football that people are demanding if you haven't got the wingers. He's now got Ansu back. He's converted Dest. Whether that happens on Sunday as well will be interesting. I think he should take credit for the fact that when everyone last season was screaming for Ricky Pudge, he said, no, Pedri and then Elias. And likewise this season, some people still saying, where's Ricky? And lots of people talking about Nico, who I haven't seen much of, but I'm sure is going to be a great player. But again, Kuma says, no, Gabby. So, you know, there's something, there are reasons to give him some praise. How long he hangs on, if there's an absolute hammering, I think we'll have Xavi back on the table, I think, as an option. But I think he's turned the corner, and I don't think they will be destroyed by Madrid. And I think he'll stay for this transition season. Joe.
Yeah, listen, hello to all three socios. I think Pete gave you another answer further back in his expression about living day to day. This isn't a season of massive clarity and strategy and peaceful mindfulness. There's a crisis every time Barcelona open a filing cabinet. I mean, right now, their debt management is literally a day-to-day thing. They're in open warfare with their own members, socios. They had a general meeting last week and they went so slowly, particularly when socios were furious about issues that didn't pertain to this board and Laporta was filibustering so that he could get off the subject. And the AGM had to be abandoned. And there are rules, there are laws that actually said if you abandon it and you don't instantly, the minute you say this meeting's abandoned, you don't say when it's coming, the board can be kicked out. So they got away with that one.
They were going to miss the game, weren't they, Graham? The Valencia game is kicking off.
There's a game? There's a game? Second half is this weekend, ahead of the Clásico. Meanwhile, ex-president Bartomeu is giving evidence to police about a criminal investigation. There are constant renegotiations going on, which have gone extremely well if they've renewed Pedri and Ansu for €1 billion each. And all the little stupid jokes about, oh, that makes them Newcastle players by January the 1st and all that kind of shit. You know, ha ha ha, but at least they're properly protecting their players because nobody can spend €1 billion. That's fantastic. Finally, they've done their contractual work well. Koeman's future is just literally the hokey cokey. And that's 1% of the, you know, flying spaghetti monster rubbish that's going on within that board, within that club, at the training ground, at the stadium offices, every single day. And there will be another revelation. There will be another proper shock coming over the next 3 weeks. And therefore, amidst all that white noise, while I agree largely with what Pete's assessment of Koeman was, Koeman has done things. I think he's an absolutely stinking rotten analyzer of games in action and the decisions he makes consistently over 6-7 months aren't good enough. And the players know it. He is, and on this I sympathise, but nonetheless he's still to blame. He has got caught up in a me versus you thing with Laporta. Now, Laporta seeded that by in the summer saying, well, I mean, literally coming out and saying, keeping you because there's nobody else, son. So, you know, on you go. Yeah, I mean, do your best. That's a rubbish way to, you know, run a ballroom. And I would have gotten at this mess too, but he's forgotten little things about how he expresses himself in public to the players, what decisions he makes based upon what's my job. My job is not to keep my job. My job is to keep on doing the right things as a coach for Football Club Barcelona. He's been given space to do that by Jordi Cruyff and orders from above that have helped him get back to focusing. But he's a street fighter, Koeman, make no mistake about it. And he got involved in a Jake LaMotta brawl with the media and with Laporta. And that took away from his ability to do the job well. I agree with Peter that unless there's an absolute humiliation, then he probably, I was going to say stumbles on, but that's now not right. 2 wins in a week, 3 straight home wins for the first time in a season, this season. So certainly I think there's a case that he reaches the winter market. There's an international break coming up, which very, very often is a gallows moment for coaches. There's time to make changes, just about time to bed a new man in. So let's wait and see. You know, I think we are sitting knitting by the side of the guillotine, and the blade falls at some stage, you know, in the next, at worst, in the next 7-8 months. Making it to the end of the season is a big prediction, and it might happen, but I think that Joan Laporta's, he's used all his lives. There's the way I want to say it. He has no lives remaining.
Just to touch on Chris Hennigan's question about this new generation, Gavi, Pedri, Ansu, Ricky Pooch, etc. I don't want to twist Chris's question to my own agenda, but I mean, this Ansu renewal is quite hot off the press, isn't it? I mean, this was just announced
last night.
Was it yesterday? Yeah, it was last night
after the match.
Can you both tell us your take on this? I mean, was this inevitable that it was going to happen? You would imagine, you know, I think he's got Mendes as his agent. He must have had offers piling up. Was this just inevitable that he was going to extend, or, you know, what are the implications of the fact that he now has?
Well, according to Bartomeu, Barca had €150 million offer for him last season. Was it Graham from a Premier League club? Well, in Bartomeu's final season. So I'm sure you know that sort of interest definitely exists. It's a 6-year deal, which is long. As Graham says, the billion release clause keeps everyone away. You know, it's just great news. They had to keep him. It's one thing to lose Messi almost at the end of his career. To lose the next Messi, not as going to be as good, but the next number 10 at the start of his career would have just been absolutely catastrophic.
Having lost Elish. He's not a 10, he's not a Messi, but Elish was going to be literally extraordinary in that Barcelona system. To be doing his things in that position, and the degree to which his progression would have linked with Gavi, would have linked with Nico, would have linked with Pedri, would have linked with Ansu. That's you know, I think people outside the Barca fan base, outside the maybe the people that you and I see week in, week out, Peter, Elish going for nothing is verging on disastrous. And Martin used the word inevitable, which in this club right now is too strong. And all you were doing was rephrasing Chris's question, Martin, but so inevitable that Barcelona have been able to carve out the way to renew him and have the money available at a time when they've been reducing the salaries of Piqué and Busquets and Alba and Sergio Roberto, etc. Those players know where some of their money has gone. It's gone to Ansu. So you had to, one, be sure that
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Wasn't going to cause a rebellion within it. Hold on a fuck. I'll give you some money back, but it can't even go into him. Okay. They don't feel like that about Ansu, so safe ground. But the thing that made it inevitable was, and poor old Mendes, short of a bob or two, hardly gets any transfer deals. his client says to him, George, don't arse around here. Get a deal, but we're staying. I've told him I don't want to go anywhere. Get this deal done. Players and agents don't face that situation all the time. Agents are always saying to players, don't make it easy for them. Pretend you've got offers. Pretend you're not happy. Blah, blah, blah. Don't talk to the president, you know. Ansu told everybody who'd listen, as did his father, yeah, we're staying. They at the moment, if he and his family are head over heels in love with the club now, then, you know, what will they feel like in 2-3 years if they get things going again? But that's what made the deal so easily doable. Ansu told everybody who'd listen, I'm staying.
Okay, that's it for the first part of this month's Q&A. We'll be back tomorrow with more from Pete and Graham. Thanks to the socios who sent questions in, and thanks to you for listening. Bye-bye.